The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Trigger warning, the following episode contains descriptions of graphic violence and adult language. Viewer discretion is advised.
I'm Danielle.
I'm Max.
And each Wednesday, we crack open a bottle of wine and dive in to some thrills, chills, and spills. This is Innocent Till Tipsy. I had never heard about any of this. It wasn't until we were looking at our Child Star episode that I started, like, I was on the phone with my mom reading through the script, and she's like, oh my God, there's so many more. And she even listed off, like, Jodie Foster was a prostitute in that movie Taxi when she was like 12 years old. Oh yeah, 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 yeah. So I was like, okay, I want to know what that's about. So I Googled Jodie Foster and it says the John Hinckley incident. And I was like,
so okay. There's an incident. Okay.
Well, this is it. There's an incident. So I hadn't heard about this. Obviously, I had heard about the assassination of, the assassination attempt of Ronald Reagan back in 1982. Yeah. So let me just set the mood for you. Okay. On a drizzly March afternoon in 1981, President Ronald Reagan was leaving the Hilton Hotel in Washington, D.C., when a voice rang out from the onlooking crowd. President Reagan, President Reagan. As the president turned in the direction of the voice calling him, six shots rang out. The first bullet tore through the brain of press secretary James Brady.
Oh, my God.
The second, I know.
I didn't know this much about it.
I didn't know either.
Like ringing a little bell, like I knew the attempt, but.
Yeah, and I've seen the video because there is a video of this. Just like the actual assassination of JFK's brother. But yeah. The second bullet hit policeman Thomas Delahunty in the back. The third overshot the president, hitting a building. The fourth shot hit Secret Service agent Timothy McCarthy in the chest.
Okay, I've seen that. I've seen that happen. Yeah.
The fifth shot hit the bulletproof glass on the president's limousine. And the sixth and final shot actually did hit the president in the chest, grazing his rib and piercing his lung just inches away from his heart. I didn't know he was actually struck.
I didn't know that either.
No. So within seconds, he's actually spitting up blood, which I've always heard is like a death. So his limo speeds towards George Washington University Hospital, where he went immediately into life-saving surgery measures. So this entire event, as I said, it's caught on camera. You can see the Secret Service members, the police dodging, wrestling the culprit to the ground. Over the years, I'd seen like all these reports of this event. I've seen that video countless times, but I feel like maybe this is my age showing here. I never knew about Jodie Foster's accidental involvement in this.
No, I didn't know. I didn't know this.
Yeah. So the person, John Hinckley Jr., who tried to assassinate the president, he became obsessed with child star Jodie Foster's film Taxi Driver, where she portrayed a child prostitute. I actually watched the film in prep for this because I was like, I've never actually seen Taxi Driver. I'd always heard that this was kind of like a scandalous role for a 12-year-old to be playing, and she's portraying a 12-year-old prostitute. I watched it. You know, last week we talked about Brooke Shields and how her mother had put her in, like, I think it was Baby Doll or something, that horrible movie where they had said it was basic child pornography. I don't think Martin Scorsese.
Oh, the Island film, one.
The Island one, but there was another one where she portrayed a child prostitute.
I got you. Okay, yeah.
There was another one, yeah. So, I don't think it's like that at all watching Taxi Driver. There wasn't really any scene where I was like, oh, this is too much. And maybe Jodie didn't know fully what she was portraying as well. She wasn't dressed too provocatively either. Like a lot of like,
wasn't so scandalous.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. So I just thought it was interesting though. Like as we went from the child star and parents taking advantage of their kids into like this, but the assassination attempt was all in the hopes of getting Jodie Foster's attention. That's why he did it. He wanted her attention.
What?
After years of stalking, calling, writing notes to her. Yeah.
Like, this is going to get you good attention. This is going to get you, like, blacklisted to never come near her ever.
I'm telling you.
For any reason.
I know. I never knew this kind of, like, mental illness was the driving culprit at this whole event. So, whoa. I know. His last letter to Jody before he attempted to kill the president read as follows. Dear Jody, there is definitely a possibility that I will be killed in my attempt to get Reagan. It is for this very reason that I'm writing this letter now. As you well know by now, I love you very much. Over the past 7 months, I've left you dozens of poems, letters, and love messages in the faint hope that you could possibly develop an interest in me. Although we talked on the phone a couple of times, I never had the nerve to simply approach you and introduce myself. Besides my shyness, I honestly did not wish to bother you with my constant presence.
Yeah, please don't.
He didn't do a good job of that because was stalking her.
Yeah, why? These poems, the calls. Your constant present is constant. So.
It is constant already. Could it be worse? Could it be any worse? I know the many messages left at your door and in your mailbox were a nuisance, but I felt like it was the most painless way for me to express my love for you. I feel very good about the fact that you at least know my name now and how I feel about you. And by hanging around your dormitory, I've come to realize that I'm the topic of more than a little conversation, however full of ridicule it may be. At least you know that I'll always love you, Jody. I would abandon the idea of getting Reagan in a second if I could only win your heart and live out the rest of my life with you, whether it be in total obscurity or whatever. I will admit to you that the reason I'm going ahead with this attempt now is because I cannot wait any longer to impress you. I've got to do something to make you understand in no uncertain terms that I'm doing all of this for your sake. By sacrificing my freedom and possibly my life, I hope to change your mind about me. This letter is being written only an hour before I leave the Hilton Hotel. Oh, Jody, I'm asking you to please look into your heart and at least give the chance with this historical deed to gain your love and respect. I love you forever, John W. Hinckley.
I obviously mental illness was to say, I don't understand why this, if he thinks he might die or get arrested, how is he going to win her heart?
Mental illness is a strange little thing. I'm telling you, like I read that and I was like, holy bananas.
Can you imagine if you open that letter, you're like the assistant that's like, ah, shit.
Yeah. like, fuck.
Anyone got the number for the FBI, Secret Service, anyone?
Yes. Wow. Before we dive into this, and I do want to say before we even like get into the wine, he's free now, which I didn't know that was a thing that you could almost kill the president and
they
get
ever
out.
Let you go.
Yes. Although it's a good thing because like, yes, he's obviously very mentally ill. Now, this has been a controversial topic of whether him being released is a good thing or not. Like, that's something we'll definitely discuss.
Not up to us.
Because, as of right now, he has there's no restrictions on him anymore. And that's why this is very timely news, actually, because just this June, all of the restrictions on him, monitoring his medications, where he is in the world, although I'm sure the Secret Service always knows where he is.
Yeah.
But he is just a free man now. He's trying to promote his music career right now, selling concerts and I know.
That's an interesting hook.
A very interesting hook. So before we get into his obsession with, and it's weird because I feel like it's like an obsession with underage Jodie Foster, but he's pursuing her when she's an adult because at that point in time, she's already at Yale. Anyways, before we get into that, let's talk about the wine that we have today from our friend Naked Wines.
Yes. I'm so excited for this. I had to open it because honestly, I just wanted to smell it and it smelled like this whole room smells great now. So
really?
I'm just going to do one more rosé because I love spooky season, but I'm also sad to say goodbye to summer. So, but this would go good anytime. I haven't tried it yet though. I waited. So this is from our friends at Naked Wine. Sorry, I know you can't see this very well. It's Patrice Gresset, I think I'm saying it hopefully right. It's French. So I read a little bit about it. It's a 2020 rosé. I believe it's like a limited edition because when I was reading some reviews, there's people that are like, oh, I wish I could grab another bottle. I know. Sorry, I'm going to enjoy it for you. It's normally 25, we've talked about this before. They have amazing deals. So if you're an Angel, you get a discount. Mm-hmm. Normally $26, Angel price $10.99. So exciting.
Yeah. Yep.
And, as I mentioned, it is from France and the winemaker was really cool. It was cool on Naked. You can, leave a review about your wine. If you don't like it, you get a full refund and they'll hopefully pair you with something that you might, that's more to your taste. But it was really cool to see the winemaker, Patrice himself, was responding to the reviews, like even good ones, bad ones, whatever. But like he's like, bonjour. and it was really cool to see. It was even like 2 days ago, 3 days ago. Yeah. Like some people love it. Some people are maybe not rosé people, but again, through Naked, you can just swap it out for something you might like better. And I'm excited to try it. So that's what I have.
What do you have? I think this one's cute. It's called Rabbit and Spaghetti. Kind of makes me hungry though. We're getting near lunchtime and I'm like, oh God, yes. I wish I could have some actual spaghetti with this. It's
yes, we are morning drinking.
We always are morning drinking. yeah. So it's a 2020 bottle. It's the Angel price is $16.99 but the regular is $21. So it's definitely a deal, on Naked Wines. I know, it is a bronze winner. It's like an Australian award-winning wine. So I'm really excited to try it. It is the Barossa Valley Shiraz. But it seems like it's got a mixture. Like it says Cabernet Sauvignon is 52%, Shiraz 44%, and Malbec 4%. We love Malbecs too.
Oh, I love that.
I know. So it's kind of like a blend. I'm excited to give it a shot because I just love my reds. I'm never a rosé kind of girl. I'm excited for the fall. But yeah, and it says that this bright complex red is bursting with fresh red fruit flavors from ripe cherry and juicy raspberry. So I'm not sure if this will be on my taste level because, you know, I'm more of like,
yeah, I like fruity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. We'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
You're way ahead of me today. Oh, we'll go a little bit more.
Why not?
Oh, it smells good though.
Cheers.
Cheers. It's because it's the morning. Every time I'm always like, whoa, that's shocking.
That's why I think I picked my rosés to go first. I was like, it's 10 a.m.
Santa's coming to town.
Oh, I like it. I definitely read, and this is very true. It's not as sweet. Mine's not as sweet. So if you like sweet rosés, not for you. But
I'd probably like it.
That's probably why I like it too. Yeah, that's why you might like this.
Yeah.
Yum. Mine's supposed to be blueberry, raspberry aromas. Yeah, like I said, the whole room smelled like aromatic. Mm-hmm. I don't know, smelled like rosé.
I think I'm gonna like just slightly sip this one today because I love it. But like it says on the website right now, your Shiraz is the perfect cold weather comfort to sip and bundled up beside a roaring fire with like some cheese and everything. And I'm like, yeah, I want it with like food. This is like a food wine. Yeah, I can see.
I'm so excited for spooky season fall. I love the idea of fall, like before it gets cold and shitty. Like,
oh yeah,
air, wine on the patio.
But you have to deal with like the actual snow and everything.
Yeah, actually, it's cold.
Yeah, thankfully I don't. But yeah, I know it's like, yeah, it's super rough. I do miss though, like seeing the leaves change and everything else. But
I agree.
Mm-hmm. No. I feel like I need one more sip before we dive into this mess.
I know this is going to be crazy. I had no idea.
I didn't either. So
wait, can I watch the clip really quick?
Of which?
Of the assassination.
Oh, the assassination. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a long time since I've seen that because I've like seen like other Secret Service heroic effort. Like it goes into that whole like montage of like, when Secret Service saves the president, like things you may not know. And this one, you can't see the shooter. It's like behind the camera.
Well, I watched a thing on it and it talked about how like there's so many, and maybe that was the clip you watched too. There's so many different levels to the president, like getting to the president. So it's wild. Like you think about the inner circle of the Secret Service, but then you think there's the police force. There's all these like outward circles. So the fact that he penetrated all of them and was able to get directly to Ronald Reagan at that time.
He's like so close.
It's crazy. Mm-hmm. Crazy. Yeah.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
So before we dive into John Hinckley Jr., well, I'll give you a little bit of backstory on him. He was born in Oklahoma, I believe. He was just 25 years old when he did this assassination attempt. And of course, I feel like whenever there's an assassination attempt like this, it is riding off the heels of, you know, John Lennon being shot. It's just like all these infamous people, you kind of get the attention. I feel like that was a big driving force of it. He did come from money. So his family were in the oil industry. So yes, he was very well off. And we're going to get into a little bit of his backstory and how he was kind of aimless in his young adult years. And his parents were rightfully very concerned about where he was headed. Sure. Before we talk about him, let's touch a bit on Jodie Foster as a child star. I know last week we talked about the issues with child stars and all of the abuse that they withstand. But I will say Jodie Foster is so private. Not much is known about her upbringing.
So I had to look. I was like, I know what she's in. Obviously, Silence of the Lambs.
What else have
I seen? Okay, Panic Room, Flight
that's
Plan.
That's what's crazy to me because I always
knew comes
her.
In and out. She's like timeless, though.
She is timeless. And I always knew her for her acting chops. Like, I never knew her for anything like this. I never knew anything about her personal life.
No.
The only thing I knew was for years it's been speculated that she is a part of the LGBTQ plus community. I don't know if you know about this.
No, but I can see why that would speculate whether she is or not, because her voice is very low.
Oh, really?
Well, when I think about how she sounds in Silence of the Lambs, I'm like, oh, I can see that. Yeah, okay.
So speaking of Silence of the Lambs, publications in 1991 alleged, you know, and I think to this day, Silence of the Lambs can be seen as very controversial because of whether it sees the trans community as like putting them in a bad light kind of thing. And there's always been discussion about that.
Cool. Okay. I was like, why?
Demonization
I'm totally remembering. Silence of the Lambs. Yeah.
Okay, so demonization of that community. But during this time, so while the publications are discussing this, and mind you, it's 1991, we're 30 years ago, like we were in a much different place mentally than we are now. But they also threw her under the bus, calling her homophobic because she was a closeted lesbian. So they're trying to out her, which I believe is more homophobic than anything, but like whatever.
Yeah,
they're trying to publicly out her. I know, it was the weirdest thing. So Jodie didn't officially publicly come out, although she still kind of hasn't, until 2013 at the Golden Globes. She didn't use the words gay, lesbian, but she did talk about her partner, Cindy Bernard. Why? Yes. So she had been in a relationship with her since 1993, we believe. They split about 2008 and they share 2 sons together. And then that's interesting too. A lot like Mindy Kaling, no one knows the parents of these boys. Like no one knows the fathers. Which I think is interesting because Mindy does that too. A lot of people believe that Mindy from The Office, BJ is the, I love her too, is the dad of her child. I think she has children now. But yeah, I like that they keep that private though, because it's none of our business.
Yeah. And just a disclaimer, like I wasn't saying to, just to clarify everyone on the internet, I wasn't saying that you can tell anyone's identity, sexuality, sexual orientation, none of that by the tone of your voice. I'm saying I understand in 1991, was that when that movie's from? Why people would be like up in arms about like, is she, isn't she, what's going on? Like,
yeah,
trying to out her and whatever. Like, Just leave it alone.
I feel like Ellen had a lot of that pressure too in the 90s, 2000s. Yeah. And then when she came out on the show for a lot of time, she was blacklisted. I mean, now we know that she's not really a great human, but you know, I feel like as a bi woman, I feel like outing someone is very poor taste. And then the fact that they're like Sons of the Lambs is this horrendous film that demonizes the LGBTQ plus community. But you know, I bet Jodie's a closeted lesbian. I'm like, what the okay.
This is so strange for me to think about now, because when I saw the film, like I like even my adult brain, I was like, why? Because when you're a kid, you also, I mean, you're biased. You have your own upbringing biases, but like as a kid, you see through some of that, a lot of that. Yeah. So when you're like saying that, I'm like, why? I'm thinking like there's criminal, you know, like you think of like Lester, right? Is that his name? You just think of them as actors and actresses and you're like, wow, what a terrible crime. Or like, how is she going to solve this? Like thinking about like the weight of the world.
Are you talking about Lecter? Are you talking about Lecter? I'm terrible. I will just out myself right now. It's one of my favorite horror movies. I've got the mask. I've got the moth tattooed on me.
I love it.
I am in love with. So that's what was funny to me upon reading this incident. I was like, oh my God, I had no idea Jodie Foster was involved in this. And it was interesting researching Jodie Foster because there's so little about her, which I love for her. I think that's actually great.
I love it. Have your own life.
Yes.
Live your life.
I love too that we don't know her for this, because in one of the interviews, one of the only interviews, she only has talked about this about three times, like a handful of times, where she talked about the assassination attempt. She said she did not want this historical event to be forever tied to her and something she was known for, saying it didn't have anything to do with her and that she was a hapless bystander.
Oh, it didn't. She just had a stalker that had mental health.
She was a victim in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She was a victim. 100%.
I wonder, did her team notify? Like, I'm sure they did, but like Secret Service, like, I mean, it doesn't mean they would have caught him or something, but that's crazy. Like, seriously, can you imagine opening that letter and being like, we got to call somebody?
So it's interesting to me. There's a lot of things with stalking that is just not taken seriously. And we're definitely going to share. We've shared before, I believe it. I can't remember what hotline it is, but we will link it below for if you are dealing with this kind of issue. But it's so scary to me that we as women, and I know this happens to men too, but I do feel like a lot of times it just feels like a very helpless situation, because nobody wants to help you and all you can do is document it, and you can call the police and then they can document it. But until a crime is committed, until you've been broken into, raped, you know, essayed, anything like that, like nothing's done. So it's very frustrating. So him finding her address, I mean, that's not illegal. Him finding her phone number, that's not illegal. But then it led to this. Like, yeah.
Oh, I just meant, I'm sure the president wants to know about threats on his life, but I'm sure they're made like hundreds of times every day.
I don't know if that letter was received. So we're going to talk about what Jodie felt that day. Yeah. So I don't know if Jodie received that letter, because Jodie talks about one of the only instances she wrote an article for GQ and she talked about that day. So we're going to read a little excerpt from what she felt immediately after finding out the president had been assassinated, all of that. But yeah, Jodie began her career at a very young age, only 3 years old, child model. And then I thought it was so funny. She made her acting debut after her brother was taken to an audition, but the casting people saw her.
That's crazy. So poor brother.
I know. Swiped his
spot. Get out of here. Go to the car.
She started to appear all over television shows. I mean, Disney, she was in the original Freaky Friday.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, cool. So she became famous in and of her own right. She's an amazing actress. I think she will always be known for that. She, at the time though, by 1980, she had decided that she wanted to just blend in and not be a part of acting. She said she thought that acting was an unintelligent, thing to work in. She didn't want anything to do with it. And so she tried to blend in at Yale University. That's where she went for school. And at the time, she wanted to be completely anonymous. She just wanted to be with her friends. She was trying to figure out herself. And now she says that she feels like she was stupid and that obviously acting is a very necessary role. She definitely went right back to that, right? But it was something she didn't really even want to be a part of at that point in time. She didn't know what she wanted to do, and she was just trying to explore herself. I really resonated with that because I remember my first couple of years at university. You guys call it college down here, but my first couple of years at university, I always get the weirdest looks of like, yeah, I went to St. Thomas University in Fredericton, and yeah.
University. It's because not all places are universities.
But can I ask for the specifics on that? Like, I don't know either. okay. I never know because I'm always like, I don't know. We in Canada where we went, we called it university. So yeah, I got Bachelor of Arts. But not that that's like a big deal.
I don't know. I'm sure somebody knows, but yeah, there's all kinds of different schools, but higher education, we just call college for the most part.
So in an interview with 2020, years after the incident and everything else, Jody said that she felt like she had tricked herself into believing she was anonymous by that point in time on campus. Mm-hmm. So she really thought, she had just had her friends group, nothing else. But by then, John Hinckley Jr. had become obsessed with the movie Taxi Driver and had already been stalking 18-year-old Jody. She was only 18 at this time. He was 25.
That's crazy.
I know. So John Hinckley Jr. was in search of the all-American dream after driving aimlessly through 2 years of college in Texas. He decided to pack up, make his way to Hollywood because he wanted to pursue a career as a singer-songwriter. Even though he had little to no musical education, you know who this reminded me of? I don't know if you can think of any. Charles Manson. Charles Manson did this exact same thing.
Oh, yes.
It was so weird to me. I was like, this is exactly what Manson did. Mental illness can
give you like delusions of grandeur, right? Like, so
true.
Like, maybe that's consistent in both of them, that they were like destined to be these famous musicians. And
yeah. So while in Hollywood, he became obsessed with that movie Taxi Driver. He watched it over 15 times, which, side note, I feel like 15 times is not too obsessed. I feel like maybe he watched it more
15
than that.
Times straight. Did he watch it for 15 hours or like 17 hours straight?
I was like, has anyone seen how much millennials watch Twilight?
it was like, I've watched a lot of movies a lot of times, like favorite movies like many times, but yeah.
I was trying to think of how many times I've watched Silence of the Lambs and not stalked Jodie Foster. It's like I have watched Silence of the Lambs an awful lot. And I even wrote an entire in school for criminology. I went to criminology and film. That was one of our classes, one of my favorites. And I wrote like a 20-page dissertation on this entire fucking film. So I'm like, I know that movie backwards and forwards.
Inside
and
out.
I feel like 15 isn't a stretch. No. I don't know. Oh, man. So he became obsessed with the main character, Bickle, who was Robert De Niro, played by Robert De Niro. Have you seen the movie Taxi Driver?
No.
Okay, so let me summarize it for you. So basically, the long short of it is it follows a taxi driver. Wow, what a wild time. Robert De Niro. And he's a previous Vietnam vet, too. So he obviously has had a lot of trauma going on and everything else. He shows a lot of disdain for New York City. He wants to get the scum off the streets. He even talks to a political figure about how, like, this city just needs to be cleaned up. Like, he just has a real issue with other people. And he's violent. Like, he's got some tendencies, right? He gets an obsession for a woman who's working in the campaign trail of a political figure, and he starts to date her, but he takes her to, and I thought this was so weird. You know, those old shoddy, I don't want to like get our video demonetized on YouTube, so I'm trying to think of how to say it. You know those adult film theaters?
Oh, like yeah. Okay. And they're in New York. Is this in New York?
They're in New York. Yeah.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
So on a date, he takes her to one.
There's no second date.
No. So she gets up. I mean, she's like obviously too like not from that area. She gets up, immediately walks out, and immediately I notice, I'm like, this is in the crappiest neighborhood ever. Like, you've got, you know, prostitutes on the street. Like, I don't even know what he was thinking doing this. She doesn't know what he was thinking. She's like, I can't believe you would take me here. Anyway, she goes back. So it's disturbing to me. For the majority of the movie, I was very disturbed by his character, obviously.
Yeah.
And I couldn't understand why someone would find him heroic until the end. So after he's obsessed with this campaign manager, even showing up at her workplace and everything else, he then soon meets young Jodie Foster's character, Iris. She is this young child prostitute. Her and her pimp get in this fight. The pimp throws him $20 and is like, you know, ignore this. Like, this didn't happen kind of thing. You didn't see it. Whatever. So he then becomes obsessed with her. And at one point in time, after he fails to try to assassinate the political figure that that woman had been involved with, which that was eerie. The scene where he goes to assassinate this guy.
That's extremely weird.
Well, it's so like similar. Ronald Reagan's. Yeah, yeah. He like based it like the way they're marching, the Secret Service are marching him out. But the Secret Service noticed that Bickle goes to pull a gun. And so they get the guy out of there. So he's safe. So then Bickle decides to go save Jody and become this like heroic figure for her. He'd already tried to get her out and sent her a letter and all sorts of things, try to get her away from her pimp. She's in love with him. That's what happens to a lot of people. So he shows up and it all of a sudden turns into a Quentin Tarantino film, I felt like. Like he just starts killing everybody.
Like
so,
oh my.
It's very bloody. Okay. Fingers are lost. It was a mess. But in the end, he ends up in spoiler alert. In the end, he ends up in a coma. And you see all these letters. So there's like newspaper clippings hailing him a hero, trying to save this underage girl from prostitution. Her parents have written him a letter saying, you know, we really want to get more money so we can come back to New York to sit at your bedside. And you don't really know if this is really what happened, like if these newspaper clippings along his hospital wall are from actual
real
people
or him.
Real or if it's in his brain that he's hailed this hero. But by the ending, I could understand how someone, especially if they're going through psychosis or something like that, might view him as heroic because he viewed himself as heroic, you know?
Yeah.
So
he's not heroic people, but yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So in the months leading up to the assassination attempt, he was aimless, totally aimless. John Hinckley was. His parents were extremely concerned about his future and his mental health. He'd participated in extremely harmful behaviors, even playing Russian roulette.
Okay.
Yeah. He took a now infamous photo where he held a gun to his head. We can show that. It's part of
the, I saw him with pictures like with a lot of guns, like in that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But he had already tried to overdose on his antidepressant medication as well. Like
lots of red flags.
Mm-hmm. He went into treatment. His parents set him up with treatment with a psychiatrist, but the psychiatrist was never aware that he had these assassination ideologies or an obsession with Jodie Foster, which I feel like were very pertinent levels that he was on at that point.
That seems pretty like shallow waters for like a therapist. Be like, are you having any delusions? Are you having like, it's like, no, nothing. Like,
no, I'm fine.
For them, just tries to assassinate the president. She's like, I had no idea. Like, well, what did you know then? What were you guys covering in therapy?
Anyway. Oh gosh. He told his parents he had enrolled in a writing program that they paid for, of course. And guess where it was? Yale University.
Oh my.
But he wasn't even enrolled in this. He just had them basically pay his way to get over to where Jody was. Yes. Now, somehow he found her address. I don't know how. Somehow he found her phone number. I do not know how. And
That's crazy.
I can't. How scary.
Yeah.
So
especially back then.
Mm-hmm. Now he was.
It's not like you just Google somebody.
No, I feel like that would have taken a lot of effort, honestly.
I know. Like what do you walk around and ask and yell? Like, do you know Jodie Foster? Can I have her number? That's crazy.
It is crazy. So he was
directory. Sorry.
I don't know. I don't know how he figured that out. Like, that's so weird to me that you could just, I feel like nowadays, like you couldn't just, maybe you could just find someone's address in like LA or something, but I feel like, I don't know.
I don't know, but he's a stalker. So I guess he found a way, right? Like,
I guess so. So he was too afraid to see her in person though, which I guess was good for Jody. I mean, honestly, it's amazing that this didn't turn into him killing her. Quite honestly,
that's where I thought this would have gone. Yeah.
Yeah. So he begins leaving these letters and poems in her mailbox. One of them reads, Jody, goodbye, in all caps. I love you 6 trillion times. And then in all capitals again. Don't you maybe like me a little bit? You must admit it. I am different. It would make all the difference. John Hinckley.
Wonder what she did with these. Do you know?
I don't know. I feel like it's all been submitted to evidence, you know, or maybe she threw some of them out. Like, I would be so, like, disgusted by the entire thing. He
like
did have
trying to submit it to the university or somebody. Wouldn't you be like, hello,
something?
It's on your property. I'm a minor, well, I'm not a minor, but I'm in your care.
Well, I don't know if it was seen, too. We have to think it's also the 1980s.
Right.
Were you thinking to, I don't know, like, I don't know if I'd be thinking it that seriously, you know? And there's two recorded phone conversations that he had with her. I'm sure he had more, but there's two recorded ones, and you can hear her in the back of one. She's like, "Can you stop calling?" She's like, "Not you again." Like, she's just like done with
she's
it.
She's like annoyed. Mm-hmm. Minor annoyance, but scary but now, you know.
Very.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
So shortly after his failed attempts to woo him to her, he began taking flights sporadically across the country, and he started stalking President Carter on his campaign appearances.
Maybe he's just obsessed. Was he just like obsessed with the movie?
Well, that's it.
Totality,
right?
Like with assassinations and presidents and Jodie Foster, like.
Yeah.
All of it.
So as he's flying frenetically at like across the country, one of his stops was Lincoln, Nebraska, which I thought was interesting. Yeah, I know.
Gotta fuel up.
I know. But in Lincoln, he wanted to meet one of the leading ideologians of the American Nazi Party.
I don't know where that is. I don't know anything about that.
You're not a member.
Not a member.
Oh, God. But this meeting never took place. But I think it's the weirdest thing that he was like,
gotta go to Lincoln.
Yeah. Like, what's his brain? Like, it is wild to me that that was like a thought process to like. It just
made sense
all over the place.
Enough to travel to do it, to go and like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's wild.
I know. So right before the assassination attempt, he flew home to Colorado on March 7th, 1981. And his father basically told him, if you don't have a job, like, I don't know what to do with you. So his father ended up giving him money and just told him basically to get on his way because, like,
it'd be too much. You'd be like, you're going where? Why? What are you trying to do?
He then was arrested in Nashville Airport for handguns in his luggage. Like, there's a lot of warning going on here. A lot of warning. And in the new year, he recorded a very disturbing monologue about not really wanting to hurt Jody, but he feared he was losing his sanity and was likely the likelihood of Suicide City was over him if he failed to win her over. So I wanted to read a portion of this. This was in New Year's Eve of 1981, so just a few months beforehand. So he writes, or he says in his tape recorder, excuse me, and he did this like on New Year's Eve. John Lennon is dead. The world is over. Forget it. It's just going to be insanity. If I even get to make it through the first few days, I still regret having to go on with 1981. I don't know why people want to live. John Lennon is dead. I still think about Jody all the time. That's all I really think about. And that and John Lennon's dead. We're sort of binded together. I hate New Haven with a mortal passion. I've been up there many times. And New Haven's where Yale is, just by the way. Mm-hmm. I've been up there many times, not stalking her really, but just looking after her. I was going to take her away for a while there, but I don't know. I'm so sick, I can't even do that. It'll be total suicide city. I mean, I could care less. Jody is the only thing that matters now. Anything I might do in 1981 would be solely for Jody Foster's sake. My obsession was Jody Foster, excuse me. I've got to find her and talk to her some way, in person, something. That's all I want her to know, is that I love her. I don't want to hurt her. I think I'd rather just see her not on Earth than being with other guys. I wouldn't want to stay here on Earth without her.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's a lot there.
And then he
blaming the therapist. I'm not blaming the therapist. Just got to throw that disclaimer out there. Mm-hmm. But in it seems like in talking to him in any capacity that you'd be like, this man needs help. This man's having like suicidal thoughts or delusions of like being with Jodie Foster or
yeah,
stalking the president. Like, because that letter has so many red flags. Like every line is a red flag for one, for his own health or someone else's health.
Yeah. And there's all these trial excerpts from like the poems that he wrote and everything. Like some of these are so crazy. Like this one's entitled Amen. Jodie isn't plastic, nor does she cry at the sight of me writhing in pain down a gutter and Anna Street, USA, because Jodie will always be Jodie. Don't cry for me, Arizona. The truth is I brought it on myself in a calculated way and by means which I would positively hurt everyone around me. Like he even wrote a poem called Guns Are Fun. Like there's a lot going on. Yeah.
Yeah. Where do you start with all that? Honestly, like that's, if she were getting this in her mailbox, now we know like you would be really concerned. I don't know. Maybe she wasn't that concerned. Just more annoying nuisance, but no, be concerned. This man's got his eye on you.
100%. So he's just 25 years old when he almost kills the president, severely injures Press Secretary James Brady. This damage permanently disabled James Brady. And when he died in 2014, his death was labeled a homicide because of this incident. Yeah.
Wow.
Secret Service announcing shots fired first over the radio with the code name Rawhide, which I just thought was an interesting little thing to put in here because Ronald Reagan and his acting career and like everything else. Anyways. The public first got the indication that Reagan was okay when his assistant said to the press in a briefing that he complained about the cost of his $1,000 suit as they cut it off of him.
Not my suit.
I thought it was funny. I read an article that his son had written too about John Hinckley being released, which I'll touch on at the end. And he thinks it's right. His son, Ronald Reagan's son, thinks it is right that John Hinckley is not being monitored. He thinks he's healthy now and is monitoring himself and is aware that he made a huge mistake. But he talked about his father just being a complete jokester and also that his father forgave John Hinckley. But the thing is his father was not the only victim in this. That's right. Where I like the press secretary Brady, like that is horrific. And I feel like, you know, the president and other people making comments on this, like obviously he had been a victim, but you can't say you forgive like for everyone, you know what I mean?
That was involved. Yeah, I mean incident. He gets only to speak for himself or his father.
Yeah. So the president did recover quickly, keeping his joking demeanor. He left the hospital on April 11th and he joked as he got into his limo that he needed to go home and have a seat. So that's fine. But the damage was insurmountable. John was arrested immediately. Obviously, he'd been like shaken to the ground.
He's like tackled to the ground. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he asked his arresting officer if that night's Academy Award ceremony would be postponed because of his actions. So he just wanted this like fame. Like it would be. It would be postponed by a day. President Reagan had already filmed a clip for it, talking, you know, on the show. But like I just thought that was so interesting. So before we dive into the trial and what happened with that, I wanted to talk about what Jodie experienced that day. This is from her GQ article. It's entitled Why Me? I was skipping hand in hand across campus with my best friend. Someone yelled as we went by, "Hey, did you hear? Reagan got shot." We continued on. At dinner time, everyone was asking if we heard about the president's president's condition was. Well, my radio had been busted for 3 months and my friend was terminally glued to the local reggae station. Come on, this is college. News can wait. No one seemed to mention Brady or the assailant until later in the evening. I finally sauntered home around 10:30. My roommate opened the door before I could even get the key in. "John," she said. "John who?" "John Hinckley." "What about him? Did he write me again?" "He's the one. I think it was on the radio." "Bullshit. You're imagining this." The phone was ringing. I answered. My dean said, "Don't be upset." He explained that my pictures and my address had been found on the arrested man. I felt tears falling up. Oh, right. Like, oh, this like humanizes it. Cause you think Jodie Foster and you think it's like, but no, like college girl in her dorm hearing, you know?
Yeah.
I felt tears welling up in my eyes. My body started shaking and I knew that I had lost control. Maybe for the first time in my life, I was meeting the FBI. I was to meet the FBI in his office as soon as was possible. Give me a couple minutes, I said. I ran to a friend's. I waited for her to get out of the shower. At least three or four loud boys listened to the news down the hall. They were drinking beer and I carried on with them for a few minutes just to prove to myself that I could do it. I laughed and made jokes like a good little actress. Then my friends closed the door and questioned me with a glance. I started to cry, but my tears turned into laughter. I couldn't stop laughing. It was simply too funny, too incredible, too painful, too bizarre. She thought I was going crazy. My laughter was strange and hollow, and I couldn't control it. It was beyond me. My body jerked in painful convulsions. I hurt. I was no longer thinking of the president or the assailant or of the crime of the press. I was crying for myself, me, the unwilling victim.
Yeah.
Crazy to think like that's how she like
reacted
and how she found out. Yeah. I just felt it really humanized you. You know, you come home, you know, from school or hang out with your friends and it's like, holy shit, that guy that's been stalking me, like you're kidding. You know?
Well, we've all had those moments. Like I think for me in my lifetime, like you're like 9/11, like you'll always remember where you were. So it's like that moment where the world like shifts because something else monumental happen. And for her, like obviously her name in this and oh God, like his, her info on his person when he gets arrested is so crazy. Don't tell me that he, I mean, obviously he was stalking her. He was too nervous to approach her, but she would have been in his proximity. Like,
oh yeah.
Like he would have like been, you know, you watch Me or something and you're like he's like in the next row of books over. He's like in the cafeteria at the table next to you. Like you didn't realize that he's there.
Yeah.
It's so scary.
It's so disturbing. So during his trial, Hinckley's defense team went for the insanity plea. He was evaluated over the course of 4 months. Prosecution psychiatrist said he was sane, you know, and defense psychiatrist. And defense psychiatrist said he was psychotically legally insane. You know, I mean, that's just the natural,
Yeah, of course. It's a defense.
In order to get Hinckley to participate, though, in his own defense, and here's where things get so fucking creepy, like so creepy. He ordered his legal team to get Jodie Foster to testify. He said he wouldn't participate in his defense if she didn't testify.
Does she testify?
Yes. So his lawyers arrange for her to testify in a closed recorded session before the jury was even selected. It was only between the legal teams, the judge, and John was there as well.
Wait, so he was there when she testified?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And when I don't think that would happen anymore. You'd be like, no, we're not like caving to your whims.
I don't know. Apparently, when he got the news that she was going to testify, he called his parents excitedly and said, Mom, Dad, I'm going to be in the same room as her.
Yeah, he just wanted to be around her. That's why I can't believe they allowed that. Wow, it was crazy. It's really crazy.
Yes. So her testimony, though, didn't go as he bargained for. No. So Jodie testified, and she testified on the one-year anniversary, too, of the assassination attempt, which I thought was bananas. But she wouldn't even look at him. She wouldn't look at him in the eye, and she didn't even mention his name. So here's a little excerpt from it. Good. Yeah, exactly. Good for her. So now with respect to the individual, John W. Hinckley, looking at him in the courtroom today, do you recall seeing him in person before today? No. Did you ever respond to his letters? No, I did not. Did you ever invite his approaches? No. How would you describe your relationship with John Hinckley? I don't have any relationship with John Hinckley. As she completes her testimony, Hinckley throws a ballpoint pen at her and shouts, I'll get you, Foster.
Okay. Oh my.
Yeah. Yes. So as I said earlier, the phone calls that he received and he recorded, or he gave to her, excuse me, and recorded, they seem to show even more puzzled Jodie. Like she didn't know what was going on. So here's a little excerpt. This is the person that's been leaving notes in your box for 2 days now. And at one point you can hear her roommates laugh in the background. And then she says, yeah, should I tell him I'm sitting here with a knife? And he says, well, I'm not dangerous. I promise you that. Obviously he is.
Maybe not to her, but maybe. Obviously potentially to her. Yeah.
Potentially. Yeah. She says, seriously, this isn't fair. Do me a favor and don't call me back. All right. And he says, well, how about just tomorrow? And she says, oh my God. Oh, seriously, this is really starting to bother me. Do you mind if I hang up? And Mr. Hinckley says, Jody, please.
Oof.
Yeah. So he never takes the stand in his own defense. The jury would say that they believe that he was insane. He was found not guilty by reason of insanity on June 21st, 1982. And for some reason at the time, some news reporters did say that this was a racially motivated verdict. Well, because why? it was a jury of 11 black men, one white. And they believed it was anti-Reagan sentiment. I feel like it was just for not clicks, obviously, for buying media or like whatever else. I feel like it was just very...
Ratings.
Back in the day. Yeah. I feel like it wasn't racially motivated at all. But yeah.
It's strange that they would allow a jury selection to be so biased. Mm-hmm. Like usually they try to select equal races, equal genders, equal mm-hmm. backgrounds. You know, like just so it's a variety, but in like yeah. large trials, I'm not saying like everybody's trial, but that's funny to me that they would have such a jury selection. Cause you wouldn't want that to be the outcome, you know, wouldn't want that to be like, oh, it was racially motivated. Like if you had a jury but both teams have to agree to the jury. So,
well, I find it interesting. So, you know how there's conspiracy theories around everything. I don't know if there's conspiracy theories necessarily around this. So, you know how conspiracy theorists, like they think about how there's incels whenever there's a school shooting or anything else, that like the CIA hired this person. So I actually did read an entire article on this about how John Hinckley Jr. was not an incel. And let me tell you why. And I don't think he was an incel. I do think he was unfortunately very mentally ill. And he had this obsession with Jodie Foster. That was a lot. I know. I just thought it was an interesting thought, because then you think about the jury selection and all of that. I was like, it is interesting, but I don't think it was that. Anyways, he was confined originally at St. Elizabeth's in Washington, D.C. until 2006, where he began a program where he would spend more time in his mother's care. By 2016, he was just like all with his mother. So she was monitoring everything, making sure. And now he is total freedom. No one's monitoring anything. I'm sure the Secret Service monitors him, but yes. After the incident, Jodie Foster would take a semester off at Yale and was escorted by a bodyguard wherever she went. Because of this incident, she had even more stalkers. She goes on in the GQ article that we read an excerpt from to talk about how she'd performed in a play at Yale and how upsetting it was because there were people in the audience trying to take photos of her. One was someone from the press, and the director had told her that this person from the press, that her acting chops weren't really up to speed. Like the director was just trying to get guff off of this as well. Like, how they had found a letter in the crowd that said that Jodie would be dead by the end of the performance. She obviously wasn't. She's still very much alive and well today, thankfully.
Yeah, but like how they're just harassing her, stalkers harassing her.
Yes. And a 22-year-old man named Edward Michael Richardson, who according to the Secret Service, because obviously they're still very much involved in this, shared a similar obsession with her that Hinckley did. He carried a loaded handgun and planned to kill her, but only changed his mind after watching her perform in that college play.
Jeez, they're on every corner and he would be in the audience. That's nuts. No one's screening a college play for guns back then. Probably not even now, but like that's, how scary. Yeah, no wonder. She can't have a bodyguard with her at all times. Like she's not going to have her bodyguard right next to her on stage.
No.
I don't know how she slept at night. That's
I don't know either. Terrifying. I don't know how because she ended up graduating from Yale. So like good for her for being able to. I don't think I would have. Yeah. I don't think so. So she has only, since the incident, commented on Hinckley three times. So the press conference a few days after the attack. And then I've been riffing a lot of this episode. So I'm so sorry. It wasn't a GQ excerpt. It was Esquire magazine. So in 1982, entitled Why Me? That was the Esquire, not GQ. I apologize. Mm-hmm. And after his sentencing, during an interview with Charlie Rose on 60 Minutes, which you can find on YouTube, which I did watch for this, she ended up canceling several interviews or ending it very quick whenever they mentioned this, which is, she rightly should. This is not her responsibility to comment on this. And she just wanted to leave it in the background.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. On, she did appear on a podcast episode with Marc Maron, and WTF with Marc Maron is the podcast, where she said she voluntarily chose not to speak about the incident in interviews to avoid being labeled as an actress primarily remembered for this incident, to avoid being... and also reflected on how her mother, who was a former publicist, helped her overcoming the media frenzy that came down after this and the public's obsession with her involvement. I do want to say, too, on her mother's note.
Sorry, Jody, for bringing this back to the top. I'm so sorry.
I just find it fascinating.
But we do remember you and didn't even know about this, if that makes it any...
Yeah.
We had no concept. Like, we had no idea. Maybe our listeners had no idea. We'll always remember you for... Well, for me, for Silence of the Lambs.
Silence of the Lambs. Yeah. Amazing, yeah. Amazing actress. The Accused, another amazing Jodie Foster film. Always. Yeah. This had nothing to do with her, but I do find it just
wild. Yeah.
Wild. Wild. So since John Hinckley's verdict and his release, he has apologized to everyone. Now he says he's glad he did not succeed. He apologized to the families of the victims, to his victims, to Jodie. He now says that it does seem insane, his involvement in this and the fact that he thought it would get Jodie's attention. Now believes that he felt it was more of a suicide attempt. He was trying to end his own life, which does make sense.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Although he was labeled an unpredictably dangerous person. As we said earlier, he now believes there's way too many guns in America. He bought his gun, though, at a Texas pawn shop with a fake ID. So just to... We'll let that be known out there. He thinks that he has now paid his debt to society by overcoming his mental illness and trying to give back to society with his music and his art. All of his, very interesting. All of his recent concert dates have been canceled by the venues that booked them. Reportedly,
did they not know who they booked?
Well, that's it. That's what I don't understand. Like, yeah. So this is very timely because he's still trying to book concerts and everything like that. Reportedly, they canceled this for his own safety as well as the safety of others. He's now 67 years old and lives in Williamsburg, Virginia. And like I said, as of June, he has no monitoring. I read that article by Michael Reagan, and he remarked that before even returning to the White House, Ronald Reagan had already forgiven John Hinckley. He even wanted to meet John and apologize to him in person, although that never happened because John's doctor said that he would just be too unstable to meet the president. But I kind of wanted to end on that note. And wow, that is the crazy.
So isn't that crazy?
I know. I had no clue either. It literally all came up because of that episode we did last week on child stars in Hollywood. But yeah. Absolutely wild. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, it's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional therapy done securely online. And you will be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours.
And what I love about BetterHelp is that you can log into your account at any time and send a message to your therapist. And they respond with timely and thoughtful responses. And you can schedule your weekly video or phone sessions so you don't have to sit at an actual therapist's office. You can do therapy wherever.
I love it because they have such a broad range of things that they can talk about and are experts in. So if you feel like something's overwhelming you, like I know right now with me, content seems to be overwhelming me forever. I'm always distracted by the office or scrolling on TikTok for forever and not really paying attention to what's going on within me. So I feel like that's been super helpful.
Yeah. And if it's not your match, they'll match you with someone else. So I know I had to try with one therapist and then I switched to another therapist that was a better fit for me.
It's also way more affordable than offline therapy, and financial aid is available for those who may need it.
Join the over 2 million people who have taken charge of their mental health by visiting betterhelp.com/ITT. That's betterhelp.com/ITT.
And BetterHelp has a special offer for ITT listeners. You'll get 10% off your first month if you go to betterhelp.com/ITT. Again, that's BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/ITT.
I know. I'm just realizing, okay, I already said, after I said, what did I say, Lecter?
No. Lecter, Lester. You said Lester. Like, oh my God. No. Hannibal Lecter.
So, yeah. Well, so close. Good try.
I was so confused. And then I was like, I was trying to think it's like Buffalo what? Bill. And then I was like, no, Hannibal Lecter is who she's talking about.
I know.
Anthony Good Hopkins, job. Who's also still doing very well.
Yes.
He posts videos of playing piano and dancing around the house and his cats. I love that he's a cat man. And he could still get it from me anyway.
Wasn't her name Patrice, though?
Patrice. No, Clarice.
Clarice.
You were all over the place this episode. I didn't even catch it. Like, oh my God.
I'm so close, but so far. I was like, I'm drinking Patrice. You're like, no, Clarice. It's like a knockoff Silence of the Lambs. Oh no. Oh, starring Hannibal Lecter.
I was like, oh yeah.
Oh shoot, I was like, yeah, so close. Oh, it's the wine. Reese. Guess it's good wine.
Yes, Naked Wines.
Thanks, Naked Wine. You guys nailed it.
Oh God. Also, by the way, we just hit 1 million downloads, so thank you guys. Yay. So much. We're, oh my gosh, so excited. We love it.
Thanks, guys.
I'm so excited. So for like this 1 million downloads, we are going to have a Patreon launch soon. So yes,
I'm so excited. We've planned so much great stuff for you on Patreon.
So
we
much
love great that stuff. You're listening, but there's so much more that we have to share, and Patreon's a perfect place to share that, I feel so.
Mm-hmm. So I'm so excited for it to launch. Stay tuned for September. Make sure that you're checking us out, double checking, and we'll definitely have way more content coming your way. I super can't wait, but thank you so much for wanting to listen to us and for being here. But yeah, until next time.
Cheers.
A Huda Media Production.